KALW.
There's generations of kids who are not gonna have the same access. They're not gonna have the summer trips back to Sudan.
An Oakland woman from Sudan is digitizing old music cassettes for a new diaspora generation.
A lot of people were commenting like, oh my God, my dad has passed away, but he used to play this tape. I've been looking for it for so long.
Preserving culture in a time of war. Then a new comedy takes audiences aboard a lesbian cruise.
It's sort of a mix of Poseidon Adventure, Love Boat, and the L Word.
And we hear readings from three writers, all writing about family.
It's about family, identity, adoption, Japanese American experience, and secrets.
It's a special edition from our literary series, New Arrivals. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. For our first story today, we go to Oakland's Temescal neighborhood, the home of a rare music archive. It's part of our series Culture Keepers, profiling people who uplift traditions in their Bay Area communities.
I was very much fascinated by bells and lights and whistles.
It's my role to learn it well and protect it and keep it.
Alors, je vais faire l'explication en anglais. Soyez tolérants.
Just the energy and the drive that they have, like the future is looking fucking golden.
Hanin Seed Ahmed is a 25-year-old Sudanese-American woman who grew up in Sacramento. She grew up listening to her parents' old music tapes that they'd brought from back home. One day she was playing her favorite song and wished she could access it online. And she wanted it to be accessible to her generation that was on Spotify and Instagram. The music all still lived mostly on cassette tapes in homes and cars around the diaspora. So in 2020, she got a cassette deck, a digitizer, and got to work archiving the classic songs of Sudan on the web. Today, her SoundCloud account, Sudan Tapes Archive, is a go-to for the Sudanese across the diaspora. And in these times of war in the country, when militias have ravaged and destroyed cultural heritage sites and physical musical collections, her work is even more important. I visited Hanin in her Oakland home to listen to some oldies. And first, I asked her to recall the time when it all began.
So it was March 2020. It was the pandemic. I would say this is my version of baking bread and like doing all the things that people were trying to do to stay sane during the beginning of the pandemic. So I couldn't leave the house. I was going crazy and I was like, I need to find something to do. I go to the garage and there's this like big box of my dad's tapes, a bunch of them. He keeps them in pristine condition. I was like, you know, I should do something with these. I have different collections. So the one I'm pulling out right now is, you know, from my dad's collection. So it's the OG collection.
The OG collection.
You know, I have the ones I got from Sugum Durman and they're like mine. But, you know,
tell me some names here.
So we have Samira Dunya, Kalam al-Nas. We have Issam Muhammad Noor. We have Ahmed al-Mustafa, Samiri. I definitely listened to a lot of Sudanese music growing up. Initially, it was against my will. I think I wanted to listen to the Black Eyed Peas and Beyonce. My dad especially has a very, I'd say, intellectual taste in Sudanese music. So he's very big on just listening to the classics. I listened to a lot of that. My favorite song growing up was actually Rahmak Ya Malak. And that tape was called Ya Raya by Ahmed al-Mustafa. So we had an old, like, 1991 Camry. It was the first car we got when we immigrated to the States. And I remember that tape playing like clockwork. So it was the tape that was played the most. And it was like, I remember it was like side A, song number one. So it was probably the song that I tuned into the most.
And then, of course, this one is iconic. This is Gisma al-Adil Wazin.
So Gizma is essentially a part of this genre known as Aghani Banat, or women's music, and a lot of this music is very integral to the Sudanese wedding process. So the song Al Adil Wazin is played in every Sudanese wedding.
What is this used for? Can you talk about
it? So this part is used for the Sudanese wedding, the jirtik, the traditional part of the wedding. Yeah, I would say every Sudanese woman who has gotten married has had this exact portion of the song played. This is when it gets exciting. Like, you know it's about to start when this song plays. So this is a classic. This is everything.
What does it feel like?
It's just good. I love this because it reminds me of every Sudanese wedding I've been to. And like, yeah, when she starts saying Al Adil Wazin, people start getting engaged and getting. So I'm feeling that now. I feel like I'm at a wedding and I'm like, you know, dancing with in a crowd of people celebrating a bride. So I feel good. Like, I'm feeling good right now. There's other singers, obviously, who do the wedding process, but Gizma is like the queen. Like, she is the queen of this genre.
And what is it about archiving that draws you?
I think it's driven by, like, my experiences being, you know, Sudanese and growing up in the States and really trying to find things that anchor your identity. So I think the thing with Sudan is there isn't this huge entertainment industry where, you know, there's a lot of cultural exports. For example, you know, like my South Asian friends, they had like Bollywood, or they had like huge things to refer to anchor themselves. And I was like, oh, like, I wish I had something like that. But given the circumstances in Sudan, it wasn't always accessible. So it was my own process of excavating my heritage and my identity. I'm fast-forwarding it, trying to get to a... There's always this, like, big space of a... Big space of, like, just silence in the beginning of a tape. And, like, I get impatient because I am a product of the digital generation. So I fast forward, and sometimes I go too far, sometimes I go too... Yeah, that part still gets me. Like, you know, I've been doing this for so long now, but it really gets me that I can't get to the exact location of a tape. You know, I can't pause, I can't drag a slider across a phone and find what I need. I mean, even this wiring right now that I'm doing is, like, it's a lot of work. I'm like, people, you know, back then, they really put effort into listening to music.
Like, this is, you say that you started this for yourself. You know, it was the pandemic. I want to do something. This is something that I love. At what point did it turn into being a bigger project than just for Honey?
I think, like, seeing the way people engaged with the tapes, right? So I was like, okay, I'll make an Instagram account and I'll put these on SoundCloud and just kind of see how people engage with the content. And then it became a huge, like, source of nostalgia for people. Like, a lot of people were commenting, like, oh my God, like, you know, my dad has passed away, but he used to play this tape, and, like, I've been looking for it for so long. So I think, like, other people saw it as, like, a reclamation of, like, of memories that have been forgotten, because so much of the music hasn't necessarily made it onto streaming platforms. So there's a huge, like, swath of Sudanese music tradition that is not not accessible in the way that, you know, you see other music traditions are. So that's when I was like, okay, I'm seeing the broader impact of the work, and I really want to invest in it and grow it into something that, you know, has this heritage preservation kind of like orientation. You know, at first I didn't think much of it. I was like, oh, like, I'm not preserving heritage, like, I'm just putting some tapes in like a tape recorder and seeing what happens. But I think I didn't really grasp the impact of the work until I saw people engage with it.
What does this mean to you? What does this project mean to you today with this new reality that Sudan is in with the war and so many people being displaced and leaving and not knowing if they will ever go back to a Sudan, including maybe your generation?
I think, you know, I grew to understand the impact of my work over time, but the war really underscored the importance, especially. So I was in Sudan actually in January, and I got a new batch of tapes from Sugum Durman. And now that same Sugum Durman is literally like razed to the ground. So I think it was, now there's this like undercurrent of, oh, our heritage is actively being destroyed. And these, you know, initiatives that are going to happen mostly in the diaspora are probably going to be like play an integral role in preserving Sudanese culture. And I think it feels more urgent and serious for me now. I think like I was making it for like the 12-year-old version of myself, where it was like, okay, you know, she didn't know how to write Arabic that well. She couldn't, you didn't have maybe like the cultural, maybe like knowledge. There's generations of kids who are not gonna have the same access. They're not gonna have the summer trips or the December trips back to Sudan. They're not gonna have, I think like there's gonna be this sense of being unanchored. The essence of archiving and why I got into it was to find an anchor for myself personally. And but you know, I had the luxury of going back to Sudan to help facilitate that. So now it's gonna be things like this that anchor like the youngins and, you know, young generations moving forward.
Thank you, Haneen.
You're welcome.
That's Haneen Sidahmed, founder of the Sudan Tapes Archive. We've got more music from her collection. Go to kalw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Actress and comedian Marga Gomez used to work on a cruise ship for lesbians. In her new solo show, Swimming with Lesbians, Marga plays several characters who are on a cruise, and the fictional ship is called the Celesbian. One of the characters is a lacrosse player looking to have her first affair with a woman. Another is a bingo caller who encounters an old bully. KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Marga Gomez.
Marga Gomez, welcome.
Hello, Janae.
Hello. Okay. When I heard the title, Swimming with Lesbians, it's, you can't really not turn away from a title like that and not ask, what is this about? Because there's a lot going on in this story.
You know, I like to hear that you cannot turn away from the title. That title can go two ways. Some people can be drawn, curious, and some people can run like hell. The title is, there's swimming in the show and there's lesbians in the show. But I'm telling a story about a lesbian cruise ship in a parallel universe It's a fantasy. It's an escape for everyone, not just lesbians. And it's sort of a mix of Poseidon Adventure, Love Boat, and the L Word.
Interesting.
And it involves, you know, sort of a cross-section of the people you might meet on a cruise. There's the captain. There's the cruise director, bingo caller. There's the kind of passengers that complain about everything.
And but they have some issues because I heard the captain is very active with their with people.
Captain Debbie is, you know, in our world, Captain Debbie would be canceled. But in this parallel universe, there are no boundaries.
Would she be canceled?
Yes, because Captain Debbie has slept with the chef, the masseuse, passengers, like a famous lesbian symphony conductor. Some people know Lydia Tarr. She's part of the backstory. Nowadays, yes, someone like that would be canceled because you can't be the boss and sleep with your subordinates, employees, you see. And that's why I always just am an employee, so I can do whatever I want.
Okay. So she's sleeping around that much. And then there's another character on the Celesbian, I love that name, who's the bingo caller who was bullied, and she runs into her bully on the ship.
I know that it sounds like there's a lot, but the show's very tight, 65 minutes. Mm-hmm. I think the story really hinges on the bingo caller. That character's name is Prue Perez. She's an introvert. She's a person with social anxiety. She's going through a crisis where it's starting to get worse. It's starting to get debilitating. And she's been always a very proud lesbian cruise ship entertainer. That's all she's ever wanted to do. She's been on this cruise ship for about 10 years. She's one of Captain Debbie's exes, but she still holds on to her job. And suddenly, unbeknownst to her, her bully from her childhood boards the ship. She's a passenger on this ship. And so the action of swimming with lesbians is a lot about Prue Perez hiding from her bullies, or how we hide from our fears. But really, we learn we must face our fears. This is taken from an actual event in my life where I was bullied by this person. Years ago, I was doing a show in Boston. And of all the shows I had that week, this show bombed. This show tanked. Guess who was in the audience? The bully. The bully comes up to me after the show like she's my best friend in the world, like she's somebody that I wanted to see. And I was already feeling insecure. And then I see her and she witnessed me having a bad show. And I had all these speeches rehearsed that I would tell my bully if I ever had a chance. And I just caved and I said, thanks for coming. And I left. And so after that show, I always thought if I could just have one more chance. And you don't get chances like this too often in life. So now she's in the show. I work it out there. It's really delightful because the thing about the show is I worked with, I have a creative team. Mm-hmm. And so I'm able to bounce ideas off them. They're able to ask me questions. And like, I knew I wanted to write about a lesbian cruise ship because I had worked on them for many years.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that, working on the lesbian, which is not a real cruise ship, but you working on a lesbian cruise ship.
Yes, the Celesbian has nothing to do with any cruise ship that is operating on the ocean.
And you worked on the Olivia?
I worked on the Olivia cruise ship, yeah, in the 90s. I was the first comedian and MC and bingo caller that they ever had. And I did everything on that ship, including, because this was the first ever lesbian cruise. We did two of them back to back on a little ship called the Dolphin. On that ship, it was amazing because the lesbians, they never thought they would see anything like this, that lesbians could travel all over the world and be out and be with their wives or their significant others. And, you know, because we were, you know, hundreds of us. So, you know, who's going to mess with, you know, 100 athletic lesbians? Nobody.
So was it fun? It sounds like, I would think you'd have a lot of fun.
It was a blast. The interesting thing is, This show is you know, it's snarky. Swimming with Lesbians is a snarky show. You know, sometimes in, you know, lesbian culture and lesbian art, we're doing stuff that it's a little preachy, but this show is just, it's just a goof. You know, it's just a spoof. You know, I really am always very careful to tell people this show is a figment of my imagination, has nothing to do with that cruise line. There's going to be a couple of sections here and there, some lines that might go over the head of heteronormative people. But I always tell them, bring a lesbian with you that she can explain, you know, the 3% of inside jokes.
That was actress Marga Gomez speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. That interview was co-produced by Porfirio Rangel. You can see Swimming with Lesbians at the Marsh in Berkeley now through January 28th. And speaking of events, Janae is also doing a live interview with artists Awan Mans and Nancy Cato. You can see them at Books, Inc. in Alameda on January 17th. And we've got all that information at KALW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Next, a collection from our series New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. Today, we're featuring three authors whose books focus on family. First, Susan Kiyo Ito lives in Oakland. She reads from her book, I Would Meet You Anywhere.
It's about family, identity, adoption, Japanese-American experience, and secrets. Here's a section from the opening part of the book, When I First Meet My Birth Mother. I walked to the hotel's front desk and spoke her surname, our name, my original name, Noguchi. Room 1211, said the red-haired clerk. The doors pinged open on the 12th floor, and I edged slowly down the hallway. 1207, 1209, 1211. I brushed the wood door with my knuckles. Time ticked like a tiny bomb on my wrist. I stood with my palm against the door, watching the hand sweep its way around once, twice, a little blade slicing away at the time. I recited a little rhyme in my head. I would meet you in a house. I would meet you with a mouse. I would meet you in a room. I'd meet you at exactly noon. At 5 seconds to 12, my hand curled into a loose fist and knocked twice.
That was Susan Kiyo Ito reading from her book, I Would Meet You Anywhere. It came out in November. Next, we'll hear from Cameron Park author Beverly Perino reading from her new book, Wildflowers.
It's about this strength, the struggles, the resiliency of Filipina American and Filipina girls and women. And here's one of my favorite parts where the protagonist visits an old lonely woman on Christmas. What she really wanted to do, without knowing how to articulate it or even admit it to herself, was paint. Not just study other painters and analyze their brush strokes, symbolism, use of color and imagery, but create something on the canvas. Her fear of exposure led her to do everything but paint, study other artists, visit museums, take a class trip to Florence to gaze at David at the Accademia and Botticelli's work at the Uffizi. Subscribe to art magazines, and even interview artists for a school project. Everything and anything except putting a brush to canvas.
That was Beverly Perino reading from her book Wildflowers that came out in May. And finally, we'll hear from Marin County author Susanna Kennedy. She'll be reading from her book, Reading Jane.
It's about a mother and a daughter, me, and what happens when I explore 45 years of my mother's diaries following her suicide. How the diaries changed my perceptions of my childhood and impact my journey through motherhood. Here's an example of what I find when I read about my early years. I knew by now from my own life that mothering is an art of translation. While I read, I notice I'm envious. I feel I'm walking through an old glamorous movie. I imagine husbands wearing dark suits and tipping their hats in the elevator, bringing colleagues and friends home for dinner. Everything is orderly and cared for. It is a perfect picture. Suddenly, I encounter something new. Briefly, as if she dared not go into detail, she writes, "Alan to bed drunk at 2 a.m. and punched me and said to get out of the bed. He couldn't stand sleeping in the same room." Drunk at 2 a.m., punched me, said to get out of bed. I read that again and again, drunk at 2 a.m. I call up later visions of my father's face turning dark at a moment's notice, slurred speech, the smell of gin on his skin, punched me, told me to get out of bed. I both want to read more and bury it back in the box.
That was an excerpt from Reading Jane by its author, Susanna Kennedy. New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse, and you can find more readings by Bay Area authors at klw.org/newarrivals. Today's Cross Currents team includes Steffi Puerto, Cheryl Kaskowitz, Devin Strolovich, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Shirin Adil, Marissa Ortega Welch, Angela Johnston, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
I walked into the door again. If you ask, that's what.